By day, Mary Bly is a respectable English professor at New York's Fordham University, but she has had a secret, one might even say romantic, double life. As Eloisa James, she's the author of best-selling romance novels like Duchess in Love and A Wild Pursuit. With her latest book, Much Ado About You, Bly has gone public with her literary alter ego. And Mary Bly joins me now from New York. Welcome.
Thank you.
So do I call you Mary or Eloisa?
Well, it's one of my huge pleasures maintaining two names. So why don't you just go with Eloisa?
Okay. You teach Shakespeare, is that correct?
I do.
How does a Shakespeare professor end up writing bodice rippers?
Well, it's sort of the story of my life. I've been writing plays for my family since the time I was about 5 years old. And most of those involved some sort of derring do and a princess, because my sister wanted to be a princess, and a romance of some sort. And at the same point, my parents are writers, so they had a literary tone to them. I wrote my first romance when I just started as a professor, and I knew perfectly well that that was a disparaged form of literature. I kind of kept that publication to myself.
Thus the pseudonym.
That's the pseudonym, exactly.
And how did you come up with the name, Eloisa James?
Well, we were expecting a second child, hoping to have a second child, and I saw the name on a lamppost in Italy. It said, "Call Eloisa, lose 20 pounds in 20 days." And I said, "That's a wonderful name." And my husband said, "No, that is a nouveau riche name." So I named myself that name. And he was reading Henry James, so it's something of a tribute to another novelist.
There you go. Now you have revealed yourself. Why? Why come out now?
Well, I have tenure. I hate to sound
practical.
It
doesn't matter
about
what they think.
I have tenure, and once you have tenure, I started to feel that I was, in a sense, betraying my own readers. Because I'm not ashamed of the work I do, and I'm not ashamed of my books, and I'm certainly not ashamed of my readers. And so what seemed to be a good tactical decision when I was a beginning professor started to feel like one that was causing me to become part of American culture's disparagement of this genre. And I wanted to stop myself from being part of that, stop the silence.
Why?
Well, because it's not a fair disparagement. Romance tends to get written off as a bodice ripper, for example, which has these very unpleasant implications of enjoyment of forced intercourse, and I don't think was relevant to the early romances that was first applied to and isn't relevant now either. And I think we need to change. We need to change that disparagement of all the women and men who read romance and of the genre and of the people who write them and simply accept that an interest in relationships and trying to find out how you can live with someone for your whole life is an interest that we all share.
Has your teaching of Shakespeare influenced your writing in these novels?
Yes, hugely. I don't think that I could write very well without teaching him day in, day out, or his colleagues. I tend to bring a great deal of early modern literature and poetry into my books, and that is something that my readers enjoy a lot.
Is there some passage I could ask you to read for me that
Sure. Maybe
reflects this influence?
One of the things that happens when you're writing Regency, which is placed in the early 1800s, one difference between the 1800s and now is that literature really was a reference point for people's daily life in that period. So I try to bring literature into the books constantly in a matter of casual conversation. On the other hand, I face a problem because many Americans who are reading my work and others probably haven't heard of all these things. So, for example, here's a situation in my Much Ado About You. I have four sisters. And many of my books talk about relationships between women, and this one, it's relationships between sisters. And they're kind of having an argument. And Imogen, one of the sisters, has a desperate crush, so to speak, on a young man who's behaved very badly at dinner and, moreover, is engaged to someone else, Miss Pithy Adams. So Imogen said, "He behaved badly at dinner because he was distraught. He doesn't wish to marry Miss Pythian Adams, no matter how cultivated she is. I think he's beginning to love me." Her eyes were teary. "Obviously his mother has chosen his bride. It's just like Romeo and Juliet, when Lady Capulet was determined Juliet should marry Paris. And like Pyramus and Thisbe, too. Wasn't Pyramus's father determined to marry him to someone he abhorred? That must have been before Thisbe was eaten by a lion, Annabel said. I'm so glad I'm not the type to be overtaken by passion. I have the greatest wish not to be munched by a wild animal. This whole business of love seems to be not in my style. I wish I were more like you, Imogen said.
Well, the literary references aside, I'm not sure that's... I read much ado about you, and I'm not quite sure that's what stuck with me in the end. I have to say, it gets pretty risque at places.
Sure.
And I'm wondering what your colleagues at Fordham say now about the secret career you've had.
Well, I have to tell you that not everybody knows yet. So, however, I can say that probably 100% of my colleagues listen to NPR. So, hello. I'm going to the department meeting on February 16th, and I am bringing copies of Much Ado About You, and I'm going to tell everyone.
I'm curious about the plot construction. You know, a lot of it seems there's these you have to find a socially acceptable way to throw the hero and heroine together and let them kiss in a room where no one can intrude. Some of your protagonists start out married, or in this latest one she ends up getting married, which is when it becomes a bit racy. Is that a conscious choice? What do you think about when you come up with plots?
Well, romance is run the gauntlet from those that just talk about courtship to those that talk about marriage. And I have to say, I'm in a marriage, and marriage interests me a lot more than courtship does. So my last series were all about failed marriages and the ways in which people made that marriage work or didn't. Now, of course, under the constraints of my particular genre, because I'm talking about people living together long term, that does include sex. I mean, that's part of people living together. So this doesn't happen in this book, but I've had other books in which part of the problem was bad sex, for example. Then they get risque. But because of the constraints of that particular time period, if they're unmarried, it's very unlikely that they would engage in any kind of, premarital activity.
So, no, I haven't read those other books. Do you have long scenes about bad sex?
Well,
that would take away from the riskiness of it.
Come on, we all. I really think that romance, in a lot of ways, it gets denigrated as just being, oh, that's, people ask me, aren't you just writing female porn? Well, I'm not. And there's actually very little sex compared to other genres, boy literature for sure. But what there is an interest in making shared desire work. So, for example, in this book I wrote last spring called Your Wicked Ways, the couple had been separated for 10 years, and one of their problems was that he was sort of the archetypal five-minute man. And that had never worked for them. And now she wanted to have a child. And was it ever going to work on that level? So yes, you end up with some scenes with really bad sex, which can be paralyzingly funny in my experience.
Mary Bly is an English professor at Fordham University. Her latest romance novel, under the pseudonym Eloisa James, is called Much Ado About You. Thanks so much for speaking with us. And happy Valentine's Day.
Same to you. Thank you.
That's All Things Considered from NPR News. I'm Jennifer Ludden.